I'm Lisa Stone, and you're listening to Parenting Aces. Welcome to season 10 of the Parenting Aces podcast. I'm your host, Lisa Stone, and we are proud members of the Tennis Channel Podcast Network. I am so excited this week to focus our podcast around fitness training for junior tennis players. And I've gotten several requests from you listeners to do another podcast, really taking a deeper dive into fitness training and what kinds of things our junior athletes should be doing when they are not on the court hitting tennis balls. I want to just say quickly, pardon my voice. I've got some sort of allergy thing happening. So, sorry about that. Also want to say up front, if you are listening to this podcast, I urge you to either go to parentingaces.com or the Parenting Aces YouTube channel to watch the video version, because this week's guest, Dean Hollingworth, is going to be sharing video and showing specific exercises for kids to be doing. And you're just going to miss that if you're listening only to the audio version. So again, the video, it will be on parentingaces.com and also on the Parenting Aces YouTube channel. So without further ado, I am going to bring Coach Dean on the shot. Let me unmute you, Dean.
Another day is here and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Welcome from Canada. I'm hoping you're having warmer weather up there and that COVID's under control up there now and all of those good things.
Well, first of all, thank you so much for having me. I'm very flattered and I really appreciate you having me on today. I'm really excited about this. And yes, we're having very warm weather. COVID is looking excellent. And good. The Montreal Canadiens Hockey Club is going to the Stanley Cup. Just
well,
throw that out there.
All is good in your world.
All is very, very good right now. Yes, thank you.
Awesome. So before we jump into this long list of questions that parents have submitted for you this week, Dean, why don't you give us a little bit of your background in training and specifically tennis training for young athletes?
Yeah, for sure. Listen, I've been involved in the tennis world for approximately 15 years now. I've been a strength and conditioning coach. I say 20. I think I'm getting closer to 25 years now. I'm a master tennis performance specialist with the ITPA. I'm on the board of education with PTR, RacketFit certified also. Been working with players from the age of 8-10 up to WTA players. I was lucky enough to travel with Eugenie Bouchard and most recently with Elena Vesnina, who, you know, before she gave birth, finished that part of her career ranked number one in doubles. So I've been extremely fortunate, as I've said, to really work with phenomenal people, phenomenal athletes, and it's really helped me develop my skill and really excited to share with you, with everyone today, you know, what I've experienced.
So really quickly, Dean, I think you're a little fuzzy on my side. I don't know if I look fuzzy on your side. Your audio's fine, but the video's a little fuzzy.
Yeah, no, I mean, you look good. I'm not fuzzy here either, so okay. I apologize about that.
No, it could just be my connection, so I'm not going to worry about it too terribly. And if it's, for those of you watching, if it's fuzzy on your end, my apologies up front. Hopefully it'll clear up. And Dean, I want to just add that you and I first met at the WTCA conference in New York several years ago and connected through Facebook. And I have been sharing your amazing video content on our Facebook and Instagram ever since we met, because I think you do great work. You are creative and you seem to have a very, very good understanding of the specifics that young tennis players need to keep their bodies fit and ready for competition. So that was why I reached out to you to do this podcast. I Mark Kovacs has been on the podcast in the past, and you mentioned ITPA. That's Mark's organization, and love him and have all the respect in the world for him, and am thrilled that we get to have another voice this time. So that said, let's jump into these questions. As I mentioned. So first question, and I've got my list in front of me here, so I'm cheating a little bit. No. First question, how much non-hitting training should juniors do?
Yeah, that's a question that comes up more often than not. I seem to get asked that, so especially by the parents. You know, how much time should my young athlete spend either in the gym or off court working on specific movement patterns? You know, first of all, I would say that it kind of changes as the junior athlete gets a little older. When you're working with 10-year-olds or 12-year-olds, like the really junior of the juniors, even 8, you know, we want to do some extra work, 10, 15 minutes, nothing too much. We really want it to be playful. We want them to learn. We want them to enjoy it. It's not something where I see a lot of structure at that young age. And when I mean no structure, I mean you let them learn through experience, through the process of moving. As they start getting older, then I start feeling like now we have to start becoming a little more serious in terms of developing that tennis specific movement patterns that are essential for junior players, for any player for that fact, that your warm up, just taking a slight step back, your warm up should really incorporate some of this. You know, I truly believe that if a warm up does not have any specific patterns in it that the athlete will be performing on court prior to getting on court, then that warm-up is really lacking. So having said that, I think, you know, if you can somehow perform 30 minutes of movement training 3 to 4 times a week, and I would highly encourage parents that it should be done prior to practice. If your child is going on court for an hour and a half, 2 hours, coming off afterwards, trying to develop specific motor skills, trying to develop acceleration, explosiveness, that does not work. You know, you want to do it when the athlete is fresh. So definitely, 3, 4, even 5 times a week, depending on how much time the athlete's putting on the court, because that's one thing we have to be concerned about, is this load, this volume that tennis players seem to just get pounded with. You know, it's a repetitive sport, and it's not surprising sometimes that, you know, the shoulders, the back, the knee injuries, especially with young kids that are developing, we have to be smart. We have to be smart with our loading phase. We have to be smart with the amount of time that they're putting on. You know, I'm a firm believer that less is more. I'd rather see an athlete be on the court for an hour and a half working hard than 3 hours of, you know, work that isn't truly up to par. So I think 30 minutes, 3 to 5 times a week on court, you know, not on court, but on court type of drills, movement drills. And then as the athlete gets older, then we really have to look into developing that young athlete in a more physical sense, meaning starting to work out. Now, the workout doesn't have to be hours in a gym whatsoever. If you go in, you work hard, it's well planned out, 2 to 3 times a week, you know, 40 minutes, 45 minutes tops. I don't even like being in the gym that long. I will not ask someone else to stay in the gym for that amount of time.
Got it. Okay. And we're going to get more specific as we go. So those of you listening slash hopefully watching, be patient with us. We've got lots of questions to get through. So next question, should juniors attend specific agility speed facilities that seem to be popping up all over the place?
Oh, you know, that's not an easy question to answer from the standpoint that it really depends on the facility. You know, I've seen some facilities where they do phenomenal work. And I've also seen the other side of that coin, whereas they have one trainer for numerous kids. Often it's a very young coach that's just come into the business and has been told what to do. And it's more along the lines of barking out orders than actually helping the young athletes become better athletes and, you know, correcting and showing proper technique. So I can't say yes or no, because it really depends on the situation and the facility itself. And one of the things with tennis is that I have seen some kids go to very reputable facilities that teach speed and agility, but tennis is a different animal. It's different. You know, you have to incorporate the split step. You have to incorporate specific movement patterns. It's not the same thing as the other sports. So if you're going to try and find someone to help your young athlete, I really think having that tennis background and that knowledge of the sport with the complement of being, you know, a developer of athletes, that would be the best scenario, because I've never told a parent that I'm going to make their child a better tennis player. I've never said that. I have said every time I will help them become a better athlete, because the better athlete you have, the better tennis player you're going to see.
So that is exactly in line with what I am hearing from top coaches all over the place, which is develop the athlete first, the tennis player second.
Yeah, it's true. And, you know, on that topic, Lisa, you know, it's not just these facilities. I have kids that go to universities and they come back and they're like, wow, the coach, the poor fitness coach, he's with the football team. He's trying to train us like football players. And it's not working. And let me say this, I'm not talking about a D2. I mean, I've heard this from some high level D1 colleges, where it's the assistant football strength and conditioning coach working with the women's or the men's tennis team, and it's just not meshing.
Right. So I'm going to skip down the list because you brought it up. How do you find the right fitness coach?
Oof, that's the big question.
Yeah,
I think the best way to do it is ask around, ask other parents. Someone's must have found somebody that they're happy with. And once you find someone, I think it's important for the parents for the first couple of lessons to actually go and watch what this trainer is doing with your child. And see, I mean, if it feels right and it looks right, then it's probably right. And check their background, see what their experience is. I mean, do they have experience with tennis players? You know, do they have the certification, you know, of being a certified strength and conditioning coach, of being a certified tennis professional, of being a certified speed and agility coach? Because there's a lot of great organizations out there that do the certifications. And at least I would want to see somebody that has taken the time to invest in themselves, to reinvest in the athlete.
Yeah, I love that. And I know that, you know, these certifications, some of them, you know, are mail order, pay your $150 and get your certificate. But the ones that you're mentioning are much more in-depth in terms of the training that the coach needs to do, the type of testing that they undergo in order to gain the certification. And so these are reputable, as you said, organizations, ITPA, you know, Certified Strength and Conditioning Coach. These are organizations that I think parents should feel comfortable trusting that certification, that it is going to at least give the coach a basic level of knowledge to, at, at the very least, not injure your child, which, you know, we all have seen and heard those stories of kids getting really badly hurt in the gym.
Well, you know, the stats don't lie. 70% of injuries in the gym are usually due to a lack of supervision. Right there, I mean, that's not right. And then also just doing too much too soon and not doing what's appropriate for the young athlete. I mean, you know, fortunately and unfortunately now with social media, you get to watch a lot of different type of exercises. And you know, some of it's just, it's not right. It's wrong. It's being produced for likes. It's being produced for extra, you know, followers because it looks cool. And at the end of the day, I mean, you know, keep it simple, stupid. I mean, that's the truth. You know, the KISS principle, and the basics will get you further than all the coolest exercise. Because, you know, what a high level tennis player is doing today is not appropriate for your 12-year-old. That's the bottom line. What they were doing when they're 12, that would be more appropriate. I mean, I've seen it. I've seen it in gyms where, you know, hockey's huge in Montreal. So, you know, this one young boy, I'll never forget this, is training. And then the parent, you know, I go to a parent, I say, I don't want to, you know, butt in here too much, but it's not appropriate. And the father said to me, oh, well, this is a training program of an NHL player. Well, you've proven my point. You know, your 12-year-old son is not an NHL athlete at this point. So, you know, again, simple and pay attention to detail. I mean, I don't think the detail can be overstated in this case.
Yeah, agree. Okay, next question. What weight lifts are most important to tennis?
Okay, so I think, again, this really depends on our age groups. And, you know, I can show you videos of some of my younger athletes working out and doing very basic exercises. I think people have to realize that the human body performs a push, a pull, a squat, a hinge, rotation, and locomotion. That's how you should be training the body. You know, if you have a 12 or 14-year-old son or daughter and the trainer's putting together something that looks like a bodybuilding plan to do chest and back one day, biceps and triceps next, that's not it. We want exercises that are really going to incorporate the full body. As the athlete gets older, then we can start becoming a little more, you know, not creative, but for a lack of a better word, you know, advanced in their training programs from the standpoint that please learn how to squat. You know, do a squat first. Do a split squat first. You know, lateral lunges before you start jumping off of things and loading it up. I mean, that's what I want to see. When I get a 15-year-old athlete, I want to make sure that they know all the basics before we go any further with it. And it's not because you're 12 that you shouldn't be doing something that someone's that's 15. You know, fitness is like maturation. You can have two 12-year-olds, but one's more mature and has grown quicker, and the other one is less mature and not at the same level. But it's the same thing for fitness, Lisa, because listen, at the end of the day, if I get a 15-year-old and I just started working with a 16-year-old female athlete, tennis player, and she's never been in the gym before. Mm-hmm. So the program that the 12-year-old or the 10-year-old is doing is appropriate. So it really comes down to, listen, what's their age in terms of fitness experience? Mm-hmm. And then that could start, you know, building upon that. And again, this is really important. Step by step, take your time with it and develop the precision that you want to see. Sorry.
Let me just clarify then. So what I hear you saying, Dean, is the first step is to learn how to perform the basic moves properly with just your own body weight, not adding weights, no barbells, no bands, no nothing, just your own body weight. Do you know how to lunge properly? Do you know how to squat properly? Do you know how to rotate your hips, your trunk without causing injury, without complicating the move and stressing the wrong parts of the body at the wrong time? And then once you have those basic movements perfected, that's when you start adding the load, the weight, or the resistance, or the height, or, you know, adding in plyometrics, things like that.
Yeah, 100%. Okay. And you can start loading up a young athlete too, because I know that's one of the questions, I'm sure.
It is.
It always is. You know, is it okay to load, you know, my young junior player? Well, I don't see anything wrong with a 10-year-old holding a 10-pound weight and doing an extra squat. They walk around with their tennis bags, with their school bags that weigh way more than this, you know? And then when you talk about doing perhaps a one-arm press, I mean, that's way easier than doing push-ups. You know, we have to use our heads with this. It's not because it's a body weight exercise that it's so much easier. Push-ups are darn hard. And if you watch most of the junior players, they're not done that well, unfortunately. And when you ask them to do it well, they can pop out maybe, you know, depending on the athlete, but traditionally, you know, it's less than 10. So,
Right. And I think, you know, again, that word load. So just to clarify for our viewers and listeners, load means adding extra weight beyond the body weight, or adding resistance beyond just the athlete's body weight. So it would be weights, it would be resistance bands, tubes, things like that. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, traditionally, for me, with the younger athletes, I'll have them, especially if we're looking between the ages of 10 and 12, you know, I don't really need weights. The resistance bands will do what you need to be done for the athlete in order for them to get stronger. I mean, we have a phenomenal 10-year-old girl in our system. She's been with me now for 2 years. So her squat is clean. Her lunges are clean. So when she does squats, I have no problem with her holding a 10, 12-pound weight. I mean, she does it perfectly. You're not going to injure, you're not going to stunt growth or anything like that, because I know that's one of the things, lifting weights, people, you know, you don't stunt the growth. If anything, you're helping the muscles become stronger, you're fortifying the ligaments, the tendons, and it's just going to give them a better battle going forward.
Mm-hmm. I love that. Okay. What footwork drills are best for young athletes, young tennis players?
Yeah. And you know, this is a question and my answer is just going to really irritate people
I'm counting on it, Dean.
Yeah, it really is, because, you know, it depends on the athlete, because it's not just, you know, when I develop a program for a person, it's not just, okay, what is the flavor of the month? What is the exercise of the month? And let's just throw it out there and let's see what happens. You know, the athlete comes to me, we do a full evaluation, whether it's, you know, with the FMS or racket fit, and then some movement patterns to put them through. And I want to see what they're good at and where they need help. Mm-hmm. And then from there, I will start selecting exercises, you know, what will help them with a better change of direction, what will help them get out of the split step faster, what will help them get to the net if there's a drop shot. But having said that, and we said we're going to have videos, and yeah, I better do it now because I don't want people calling me a liar. It's just loading up here, and I'm going to show you some, you know, some really simple, really drills that you can do. And this right here is one of my favorite ones. These videos use unique code. Oh, it's not allowing it.
Uh-oh.
Wow, that's weird, eh?
Yeah, it was allowing it before.
Wow.
We did test this all out before we started recording.
No. Wow, that's really funny. It's not allowing us to do it now. I truly, truly, let me try another video because I only chose about 50 for today. And now I'm not joking. I spent a good hour selecting different types of videos that would allow us to go over some stuff. Let's try this one.
All right. While you're doing that.
Thing, I really apologize. Yeah.
That's so bizarre. That
is very bizarre. So I'm going to do my best right now to try and describe it. So
you can always stand up and do the exercise for it.
I don't think I have enough room in my office, but you know, on my website, baselinepower.com, I'm only saying this now. I do have video series that can be purchased that has all the videos that I was going to show you. And I have one that's just called Everything Hurdles. And I love the one where we put three hurdles out and you go back and forth, high knees, really working hard, creating a box and just working, you know, sprint, shuffle, backpedal. I think backpedaling for tennis players is really important. They seem to be, a lot of the juniors often seem very awkward in keeping their balance, not knowing how to drop the hips properly. And quite honestly, some of the best drills are just basically putting two cones, asking the athlete to focus on their split step, you know, and crossing over or shuffling and mixing it up and coming back as quickly as possible and making sure that, you know, their base when they're starting, we want to see an athlete that's in a good athletic base when we start. I think often when I'm watching tennis practice, I see too many kids standing around like they're waiting for the bus and, you know, the ball's coming and then, you know, you wonder why your athlete doesn't have the best first step explosion. Well, they're not in a position to explode forward. They're standing tall. How do you move properly? And it's really my belief that first step when you take off is the most important. Listen, we're not running a 100-meter race here. We're running,
short sprints.
Four, 5 meters maybe max. And if you're slow out of the gate, unless you're truly gifted, it's really hard to make up that distance, you know, at the beginning.
And then can I interrupt you one second?
Yeah,
can
please.
You explain the athletic base, what you mean by that?
So the athletic base really is it's almost like a squat position, a quarter squat. So you don't want the feet too wide apart because you're not going to get a great push up. You don't want the feet close together because, I mean, you have no balance there. The feet the way I teach it, the feet are just slightly wider than shoulder height. The knees are bent, like, let's say a quarter squat. The hips are forward because you'll see some athletes, some junior athletes go into a squat and have those knees like shoot forward. We don't want that. We don't want the knees, the hips go back, the heels are slightly off the ground and they're active and ready to take off and do what's asked to be done.
Mm-hmm.
Because if we look at the research, 70% of balls that a player will receive towards him is within a 2.5 meter radius. So if we can get really good at that 3 meter bubble around us, that's 75% of the shots. I mean, if you can get there, be ready with your racket in order to attack that ball, and every second counts, I'm telling you, you'll definitely win more points than you lose.
I love that. I love that. All right, moving on.
Really sorry about the videos. I truly feel bad about that. That's really weird. I don't know. Maybe because it's being recorded. Anyway,
no,
okay.
That shouldn't make a difference. But maybe we'll try again in a few minutes. It's just an internet thing. Who knows? Okay. What are some dynamics? I don't know what that means exactly. What are some dynamics a junior player on hiatus can do while recovering from injury? So I guess maybe dynamic stretching or dynamic exercises or just stretches and exercises in general, maybe.
Well, that would depend on the injury also. So, you know, if let's take ankle just for an example, you know,
okay.
Because I find ankles are something that are interesting from the standpoint that, yes, the junior athletes will get ankle sprains. You know, even if you step on a ball, you sprained your ankle.
Yeah.
I find a lot of times that the junior athletes or any athlete does not recover properly from this. Yes, the pain's gone. I've put ice on it. I'll tape it for a while. But I think the really important thing is the strengthening of the ankle again to come back. We have to keep one thing in mind, or maybe more than one thing, hopefully today, is that the number one predictor of injury is past injury. So once you've sprained your ankle, that ankle...
Say that again, that's important.
The number one predictor of injury is past injury. So if you've had a hip flexor pull, if you've sprained your ankle, if you've hurt your lower back, I don't want to say that's going to be a weak spot, but that's something you really have to pay attention to. So, strengthening that ankle, whether it's just standing on one barefoot, closing your eyes, or trying to stand on a Bosu to get the proprioception back, doing, calf raises, I just posted on this a couple of days ago on Instagram. So a lot of these exercises I'm talking about, in my defense now, are on my Instagram page.
What is your Instagram page so we can...
It's _ baseline power _.
I'm putting it up on screen.
Thank you.
Okay, keep talking. I'm going to put it up.
So, you know... So it really depends on the injury. You know, if it's a shoulder injury, it's the same thing. We have to work the shoulder when it's there. And yes, the question is also, how do I maintain that mobility and stability? And it's too bad because I have this beautiful mobility flow. It's 8 minutes that I think is essential for any athlete. I mean, especially tennis, with so much dependent on the rotation of the thoracic spine, which is your upper back. The hips have to be mobile. And if we don't have those segments mobile, then other areas of the body are going to be asked to perform tasks that they don't want to do. So just quickly, you know, your middle back is supposed to be mobile. Your lower back is meant to be stable. And then underneath it, your hips are meant to be mobile. Guess what? If the hips become tight, that lower back is now asked to do something it does not want to do. It does not, it's not meant to rotate. So these are things that we have to keep in mind.
Love it. Love it. What is a good upper body strengthening technique to make shoulders stronger for a better swing?
So I am really going to try and find out how to find these exercises, because this is where I had, you know, I chose video file here. Then it's not coming up. So yeah.
If we can't make them work, maybe you can email me links and I can include the links in the show notes.
Yeah, for sure. I will. I'd be more than happy. I'll load them up somewhere. So, you know, the one thing about that question that I find really interesting is that, you know, how do I strengthen the shoulder to have a better, to have a better swing? Well, the first thing that comes to mind is, if you're really thinking that the shoulder is producing the power in order to to produce a strong forehand.
I was so hoping you would say this. Okay, go.
Yeah, you are going to have shoulder problems. I mean, it's as simple. Yeah, it's not allowing me. Damn it. It's as simple as that. You know, everybody has to realize that power production comes from the ground up, through the legs, through the hips, a strong core, into our swing forward. Yes, you need a good, you need a strong shoulder in order to maintain that ability to swing, to decelerate. You know, the traditional exercises, again, you know, your external rotation at 90 degrees, 0 degrees, anything with a band, you know, coming into an X, on a Swiss ball doing T's and Y's, those exercises are truly, truly important.
Right. And what you just were talking about power starting from the ground up, is what's called the kinetic chain. And so understanding the kinetic chain, can you tell I used to be a fitness instructor? understanding the kinetic chain and how it impacts your child's ability to perform well on the court is crucial to everything else that we're talking about today. You don't, as Dean just said, a strong shoulder does not make a stronger swing. It's got to start from the ground up. Things like making sure the feet are well stretched and well cared for. And that's a part of the body that's often really neglected, right? Is the feet. So starting the warm up by just putting the bare foot on a tennis ball and rolling the tennis ball underneath the foot to loosen up the muscles of the foot, so that you can have that stability on the ground to set up for the rest of the chain to kick in and do its job. I mean, it's simple stuff. As you keep saying, Dean, none of this is rocket science. It's just understanding how the body works. And so many of us don't have that knowledge because we're never taught that.
Mm-hmm. I love what you said about, you know, starting with the foot, you know, rolling the foot. I think that's essential. You know, when you think about what makes contact with the ground foot, it is our foot. And if we don't care for the feet, then, you know, it could be the weak link in the kinetic chain. And we don't want any weak links. And that's why I really encourage all the athletes I work with is our dynamic warm-up is done barefoot. You know, everything from the, you know, the world's greatest stretch, lunges, any of those exercises, please do it barefoot. You're strengthening your foot. You're getting the information from the ground. It's being sent up and back down. It's really important. And I would encourage, if you have time, to please foam roll the body prior to going on court too. I mean, it's the more you do, the more you're going to benefit from it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it's all just preparation for play, right? And preparation for injury prevention, because the better prepared your body is before you exert it, mm-hmm. the less likely you are to get injured. I mean, aside from stepping on a tennis ball, which is just one of those funky things.
Yeah. Yeah. No, but I think, and well said, Lisa, I mean, we should be encouraging the athletes to do a well thought out warm up. You know, that involves some foam rolling, that involves elastics to activate the body, that involves exercises to prepare for the rigors of tennis, to do some shuffling, some crossover, some sprints. I don't want my athlete's first sprint coming on a tennis court when they have to chase a ball. I want them really ready for anything that they will be faced with.
And that leads to just kind of, I'm just going to jump in here, but in the child's tennis bag, there should be bands. There should be a tube, at least one resistance level of tubing in the tennis bag. You can now buy the pretty short foam rollers. Amazon mm-hmm. sells them. I think we have a link in our Amazon shop. If you go to amazon.com/parentingaces, I think there's a link to a shorter foam roller in there. That should be in the trunk. That should go with you every day to practice, every tournament, in the hotel room, wherever. Mm-hmm. And it's just simple things. You don't need to schlep around 25-pound weights, you know, if you have these other things with you to get the body ready to play.
100%. And I'd like to add also, you know, a lacrosse ball, a baseball, also the smaller elastics that you can put around your ankles to activate the glutes and the hip flexor and the lower body. I mean, that should be standard for everybody.
Love it. Love it. All right. So talking of resistance bands, what are some specific exercises that you think are most effective for junior players?
So I really enjoy using resistance bands with the athletes. And it's not only, people often associate the resistance bands with getting stronger, but it's also to assist the athlete in learning how to move better also. So I really enjoy having the athletes perform a specific tennis movement, like let's say a split step crossover into an open stance forehand, but holding the elastic and having them work away from me. I think that's really essential. It teaches them how to produce better ground force reaction to move towards the ball. And I think the other side of that coin is also I'll pull them into their open stance. So once they finish hitting the ball or, you know, a shadow swing, they're forced into deceleration. And I don't think we talk about deceleration enough because we often people just want, I want to get faster. I want to get there quicker. Well, that's really good. The faster car you have, the bigger engine you develop, you better have the brakes to go with it because you just don't want to be flying by and missing out on the opportunity to come back. Really great. You got to the ball, you got it to the other side. You have to be ready for the next shot. So having said that, you know, I'll tie the elastic around a pole, put it around the athlete's weight, and they just do bounds. Like they bound towards and they really have to push away hard. Bound towards and push away hard. Those exercises alone will really, I guarantee you'll see a better movement pattern starting to come about.
And again, videos of all these exercises are on Dean's Facebook and Instagram. So please check those out. I'm apologizing on Dean's behalf because we really had this set up before we started recording.
It was really, really great.
It was working properly and now all of a sudden it's not. But please go to his Instagram or Facebook and check out those exercises. He's got such a variety there. Okay.
Can I try something? Would you mind if I tried something here?
Not at all.
Let me see something here. Let's see. If I share my entire screen.
No, it's coming.
Here, yeah, but now I have to find, I have to be able to get, I don't know how to, I don't know.
If you pull it up on your Facebook, can you pull it up on your Facebook?
Let me see here. What do you see right now?
Well, I don't have it on the screen, so
all right. Yeah. Yeah. Let me see something here. No, it's not doing it. I apologize again. Sorry.
Wait a minute. Go do that again, because when you were flipping through, I can see what you're doing, but I don't have it up on the screen for everybody to see. So if you share your screen again, you go. So
that's not that's not the for some reason.
There we go.
Okay. So let's, you know what, we're talking about change of direction. We're talking about rotational athletes. This is something that I've incorporated quite a bit into my training with squat jumps. So I think she's holding a med ball to make the exercise a little better. But if you notice the beginning of that squat jump, you know, it's a squat jump to 180 degree rotation. What does that look like? Looks like a backhand. It looks like a forehand in neutral stance.
And it looks hard is what it looks to me.
Yeah, she's making it look really, really easy. God bless her. So that's one of the exercises that I think would be really good. And maybe another one.
Whoops. Now I just lost you. Uh-oh. I just lost Dean altogether. I'm hoping he's going to log back in and get back here. I think he closed the wrong tab on his computer. But hopefully we're going to get him back. So I'm going to just... I'm going to put Dean's website back up on the screen. Here it is, Baseline Power. There he is.
Sorry.
Yeah, you disappeared on us for a minute.
Yeah, trying hard here to get some videos going. So let me just see here.
I don't know what you did last time, but it was perfect.
Yeah, you know, it's funny. I chose the same video that we used last time, but for some reason, some of the videos are not being allowed to play. Like, oh, now they are.
No,
look at that.
Go.
I think you were right, Lisa. So here we go. You know, you want to talk about change of direction, developing a full athlete. This exercise right here, we're going bound to a, you know, a box jump. And you can see
good power in the way up.
You think about change of direction as the athlete's doing this to a power move. Hit and jump, phenomenal exercise. Also for the young athletes. And I think we're on a roll here. I ain't stopping.
Yeah. Bring some more on.
Here, I'd like to go back. No, you see, that one's not allowed to play. I don't know why certain ones. That's the interesting thing here. I don't know why certain files are being allowed to play because they're all done with my iPhone.
Weird.
You know. It's really, really weird. Yeah. In terms of movement, boy, I hope this one plays, and it doesn't. So we're lucky we found a few. I don't want to go through all of them. Lisa, I will set something up for the people. Again, I feel very, very bad about this. But, split step off, split step on, start, squats, resisted starts. If we could see this would be good. And it's not going. So, all right, we're going to end.
Do you by chance have a video of your pre-practice, pre-match stretching warm up?
Yes, I do. Now, yes, I absolutely do. It's
because this is one of those questions I get all the time. Like, what should my child be doing before they step foot on the court?
So, yeah, it's not playing, unfortunately.
Okay,
that one.
That's okay.
I truly apologize because it is a three-part series on that. So You know, I think that the warm up should last anywhere between, you know, 20 minutes for sure. You know, a warm up of 10 minutes, you can't cover everything. I like starting off with something really easy. It's almost like a concert that's building. You know, we start with ground based exercises. So we do a couple of sleeper holds for the shoulder, some yoga poses, you know, up, downward dog, cobras, things like that, working our mobility, and then going into more dynamic stuff, you know, like our knee hugs and our ankle grabs and the world's greatest stretch, stuff like that.
Wait, what's world's greatest stretch? Yeah, this is the first time I'm hearing this
term. The world's greatest stretch is really when you have a long lunge in front of you and then, you know, you get that long lunge. So I step out with my left leg. I hold that, gives me a good hip flexor stretch. My right hand comes down towards the ground. I drop my left elbow up. I will send this to you 100%. Okay. And you do the rotation both sides.
I know exactly what you're talking about. Yeah, okay. I just never heard it called that.
Yeah, Mark Verstegen was the first person that I ever saw use it, you know, the owner of Exos, or the founder of Exos, I should say. And you know, it was called the world's greatest stretch and it just stuck with me. And
I love it.
I tell the kids jokingly, I said, listen, there could be times when you arrive at a tournament, you know, you have to get on court right away. Maybe there's traffic. Who knows? They've changed times. Do the world's greatest stretch. You cover almost all the bases with it.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. So this one parent emailed me and said, you know, I need something for my kids to do in 15 minutes while I'm making their breakfast, fixing their lunches, blah, 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 before I drop them off at tennis. I want it to become automatic, but I don't know what they should be doing each day, every day to prevent injury. Right. So are there specific things that should be in the morning routine every day that are going to help prepare the body for practice and play?
I think that goes back to what we were just discussing, essentially. Yeah. I mean, it's like performing half your warm up at the house. You know, it could be 5 to 6 minutes of foam rolling followed by some mobility exercises. Again, working the thoracic spine, working the hips. And then when you get there, you know, having the body ready that you can go into some movement patterns right away. You don't want to get on the court not having moved. So again, that mobility flow, which I will send to you, would be perfect, you know. And if they want to do their elastics in the house prior to it, I think that's important too. But I love the idea of getting ready prior to getting to the facility. I think that's brilliant.
It is. And one thing I'll just add to that is if you have a long drive, so they've done this stuff at home and then they're sitting in the car for 20, 30, 45 minutes. Yeah. They kind of have to start over when they get there, right?
Yeah. I mean, sitting is just brutal.
It's the worst.
It's called the new smoking sitting. So I think that's a great point. Don't warm up and then sit in a car for a half hour and think you're ready to go. You're going to have to do something. You may be a little further ahead. I wouldn't say it's, you know, worth zero, but I don't think it's worth everything you might think. I mean, especially in the winter, like up here in Montreal in the winter. Forget it. I mean, the car's only warming up by the time you get to the club. So you're frozen already.
Yeah. This next question, I think we've touched on. How safe is weight training and conditioning before puberty? I think we've talked about that and, you know, that it really depends on the child and their athletic abilities and how long they've been doing all this stuff and what their technique is and, you know, have they perfected those basic movement patterns? So we don't need to rehash that.
I would like to add something to that because
you
touched on it. It's not just their age. It's also their level of maturity and their ability to take, you know, to follow instructions because you could be 12 years. I've had 12 year old, you know, boys and girls that are just like, boom, right there present. You ask them to do something. It's done. It's not even a question. They're into it. They're focused that they're doing it with purpose and intent. Where you could have another 12-year-old boy or girl and, you know, I wouldn't give them a weight, you know, at all.
It has nothing to do with the fact that they have or have not gone through puberty. It has to do with their emotional maturity is what
you're
saying.
Yes, 100%. It's the emotional maturity that's important in that case.
Yes, Okay, love that. How many days a week and how long should a player be doing off-court fitness for the different age groups? So we alluded to this a little bit at the beginning, but can we get really specific? So starting, you know, under 12, then the 13, 14 age range, 15, 16, 17, 18.
Yeah, I think for the younger kids, especially, you know, As the young athlete matures, you know, if we look at the long-term athletic development, you know, when they're younger, they're like sponges. You know, things get introduced. It's much easier to learn. It's much easier to develop their athletic ability. So I would really want to challenge them as much as possible with drills that are not tennis related. I think we got to get out of that mindset that everything has to be tennis oriented with a 12 to 13 year old. And I think, you know, my question would be, how often do you go to the club? You know, if you're going three times a week, then I think, you know, if it's three times a week, then you can find time for them to do. So I think, you know, for 10 to 12 year old athletes, I find, depending again on the maturity level, some of them can do a full hour of fitness, of moving drills, because they love it and they're experiencing. My goodness, I had an 8-year old girl come see me this week, and I asked the mother, I said, you think she's going to be able to last an hour? And she says, well, we'll see, you know. And she was phenomenal. I mean, it just blew my mind. Everything she was into, it, she could have lasted much longer. I think less is better. So for that age group, I would say, you know, 30 minutes, 3 to 4 times a week. Again, depending on the athleticism of your child, maybe they need to be caught up a little more. That's why I think, you know, for the younger kids, it's important to play various sports in order to learn the different movement skills, the ABCs that we need. As we go up, I think as we start getting older, then we have to start spending more time in terms of not only being off-court agility exercises or change of direction exercises, but now we have to start thinking about some gym time also. Mm-hmm. And I would say, you know, a full hour, when I get some individuals to come see me and we work for a full hour, we can get everything done in an hour. But it's got to be chop chop, you know. Yeah. It's not listening to music and hanging out and talking or texting with your friends. Everything.
Focus.
You can get it. Yeah. You know, get in, get the warm up done, do some speed training, do some change of, you know, do some speed training, do some plyometric jumps, you know, just some jump training to get the power going. Then, you know, 20, 25 minutes of change of direction, because We don't want to overdo it, because if you think you're going to be able to work on speed and agility for one full hour, I think you're kidding yourself. Yeah. It's a lot of work and it's draining and exhausting. And yeah. One of the things I really want to throw out there that I think is truly important for parents to know is that when you're doing these exercises with your children, they have to have enough time to recover. You know, it's not do the bunch of drills as quickly as possible without any breaks. The athlete can't be sucking air going into a drill if you want them to perform at a high level. It's not a conditioning exercise. It's a speed development or an agility exercise. So they need enough time. And then
also, they're more likely to get hurt if you don't give them that recovery time, because they're going to get sloppy in their execution.
Exactly. And we don't, you know what, that's a great point, because when performing these exercises, it's just as important, the technique, as it would be to hitting a great serve. I mean, it's, you know, these are skills that can be learned. You know, sprinting is a skill. Change of direction is a skill that can be learned by the athletes. And then as you start getting up a little, as we start getting older, then that gym time has to increase. And it's not just, I think an hour of fitness, an hour 15 of fitness is great. You know, I wouldn't go 2 hours of fitness. I personally would want to like just throw myself off a building. But, you know, I'd rather do it on a more regular basis, like 5 times a week. I think you have to find that time, again, depending on when you're playing tennis. The other side of this coin that's extremely important is that this, some work has to be done before tennis. If your child, and we talked about this already, if your child's going to be playing 2 hours, Don't expect them to become faster doing speed drills or plyometrics. It's actually in a research paper that they showed that this type of work done prior is more beneficial than being done at the end. So if I can just have like 20 seconds here, speed work is done first with the plyometrics. That's number one. If you want to work on some speed and agility drills, fine. Then go play your tennis. And then if you want to play tennis again in the afternoon, or if you're doing a split, you know, day, fine. Then after that, you do your weight training. After that, you do your conditioning, and then you do your recovery work.
Okay. Perfect. I love that. And, you know, I just want to throw this out there to you because you were talking about with the younger kids and the different movement things. How important is it to take kids to the park, to the playground, and let them swing and do the monkey bars and play tag in a field and all of those things that you and I grew up doing that kids don't seem to be growing up doing anymore?
Yeah, I think it's really important. I think it's important, you know, to allow them to just put a ball out there and allow them to have fun without any adult supervision. I'm not saying leave your kids in the park and leave or anything. Like, that's really wrong.
No, don't do that.
Yeah, don't do that. But I'm saying without standing and always watching and coaching, you know, it's sometimes kids want to be kids and they should be kids. That's important. And it's the same thing with tennis. Like, sometimes it's just let them play for fun without having to play a match and then worrying about that. Oh, I lost in the car ride home and what's going to happen with that. You can learn so much more when you're having fun and it's just coming natural because, you know, especially depending on the age, self-learning, self-taught just through different movement patterns is very viable. Yes.
Yeah. Okay. Next question. Is it better to train in a group or one-on-one? Or does it depend?
Well, it seems like every answer depends. I actually like a small group. I love one-on-one because that athlete gets all the attention. The thing with one-on-one is if I'm working with you, Lisa, and you do a drill, you have to rest. You know, so if there's another athlete, the other athlete can do the exercise and then we start getting a bit of a, you know, a better rest to work ratio, especially if the athletes are of the same level. I don't think you'd want to pair your son or daughter with somebody that is, you know, not as good or, you know, of a much lower level that needs more attention. So it really, again, yeah, it depends. I would not, you know, In our sports study program, I got 20 kids and I have a woman that works with me. So, you know, it's, you know, you can say it's 10 each or maybe it's, you know, 13, 7, something like that. I can't give the same amount of instruction. I can, and I'm hoping that everyone's learning so I don't have to repeat it to each one. Mm-hmm. But the direct coaching, I think, you know, groups, I wouldn't go much larger than groups of five.
Okay.
Yeah.
Great.
That's me personally. Maybe it can do better. Fantastic. That's for me personally. Two, three, I think is awesome.
Somebody asked, can their second sport be fitness training?
You know, I love that question. Yeah.
I bet you do.
I would truly hope so. And I'm not going to lie. I have thought about that on many occasions because I know how, you know, the tennis mentality is it's everything is tennis. I mean, it's tennis. Let's do tennis. And then I really think that if you find somebody, and I hope I am like that, where the child can be, you know, put in different situations to develop all these different skills, then I don't see why not. It can't be. Absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah. How important is flexibility and how do you build it? I mean, I feel like we touched on this a little bit, but go ahead.
Yeah, no, listen, it's important. If you have a tight upper back, or if you have tight hips, I mean, it's eventually going to come and bite you in the tush. I mean, there's no doubt about it. And how do you build it? You got to work at it. I mean, that's the biggest thing. You know, I've banged my head. I've been at Club Colt de Liesse now for years. And I banged my head so many times trying to get the athletes to do the warm-up. And I'm very happy and proud to say that my athletes show up and 99% of them know they need to do it. Now, being the big pain in the butt that I am, and it's true, I am a pain in the butt, you have to be able to do it with some intent. And the same thing could be said for stretching. If you're going to sit there stretching and have your phone open on TikTok or an Instagram or something, and you've assumed the position of stretching a hamstring, but you're not stretching a hamstring, then you're not getting the full benefit of it. And stretching is something that you actually have to be mindful of, because it's easy just to stand there and not do it, but look like you're doing it.
Yeah. And I will say, flexibility is an individual thing. Not everybody, no matter how hard they work at it, not everybody is going to be able to do a split or be able to touch their toes. You know, it's just everybody, B-O-D-Y, not everybody, but everybody is different.
Yeah, yeah. If I did the splits, I would not be available for a few months. So yeah, that's for sure.
There's the question, what should a junior player be doing to prevent injury? I feel like we have been talking about that this whole time. So,
You know, I'd like to add to that, because the recovery, you know, yes, you have to work on the shoulder, but it's the recovery process, you know, and people are looking at other things for the recovery process that they may not need to look at, you know, with the Theraguns and you know, should I go for cryotherapy and all this? You need to do the basics first, because if you're not getting enough sleep, if your nutrition isn't good, if you're not hydrating properly, and you're not doing the foam rolling, the stretching, everything else doesn't really matter. Take care of the basics first. Again, you know, as soon as you finish playing, you know, you have to start rehydrating. You have to start taking in electrolytes. You have to start, the nutrition process for the body. And then lastly, especially with kids, the sleep is so important. If you're not getting 9 to 10 hours of sleep, there's a study I would show if I could, but they showed that, you know, athletes, young junior athletes, I believe it's under the age of 14, that had less than 8 hours of sleep were 1.7 times more likely to get injured. So why do we
see... That's a huge statistic, Dean.
Absolutely. So why do I see injuries increase this past week? Because all our kids were in exams. So they're going to bed later. They're more stressed. They're not eating properly. So of course, I know at the end of June, I'm going to have a few extra aches and pains.
Yeah. Interesting. Yeah. And I was going to ask you about the importance of sleep, but you just touched on that. One question that wasn't on the list I sent you, because I just thought of it this morning. How should junior players prepare for the rigors of college tennis prior to their freshman year of college? And I know you've worked with several players that have come to the U.S. to play college tennis.
Yeah. In terms of
Fitness.
Yeah.
Like getting their fitness level ready, because it's culture shock.
It's on
many levels, but the fitness side of it is massive culture shock.
Yeah. One of the things I would say is you got to get stronger. You just got to get strong. You got to put the time in the weight room and really get that body strong, you know, develop your, and one thing that I'm a big believer in is that you want to be able to do exercises on a single leg. So whether it's a, you know, can you single leg squat? You know, that's, can you do, you know, a one-legged deadlift? These exercises are crucial in developing, you know, the strength, but also the athleticism. I don't care if you can squat 300 pounds, but if you can't do a one-legged squat, what's that telling you? We know we play tennis on one leg. Yeah, we set up on two, but everything is running, you know, transfer of weight from back to front, whether it's on the serve or front, a forehand, a backhand. It truly is. We are performing the sport mainly on one leg. So I would want my athletes to get strong and powerful and really also increase that conditioning, because I know some of the coaches really put a big emphasis on conditioning. And, you know, the first couple of weeks of practice, you don't want to look like you're out of, you know, you're sucking air on day one. So get in there and be physically ready to grind it out.
Love that. All right. Final question. And we're like over our hour, but I'm going to keep going because you're too good.
Oh, so sweet. Thank you.
other than your website and your social media channels, do you have any other online resources that you would recommend?
Well, the ITPA, I think, is somewhere really to go where, you know, Mark has done a phenomenal job with the ITPA and the COVAX Institute. I think that's really, really big. Depending on what kind of content you're looking for, they pretty much have it all in terms of he has a great movement class, movement video in there. I know PTR has done some really good work with I actually did a developmental course for exactly this that we're talking about for young athletes up to, you know, we had athletes come out, join us that were 5-6 years old and finished with kids that were 16. So that was a fun day.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Dean Hollingworth, you are amazing.
Oh,
I love
excited.
What you're doing. Please keep sharing those videos, sharing that content.
I'm so sorry. And I'm so sorry it didn't work. I feel so bad about it.
No. Don't worry about that. We're going to have links in the show notes. So for those of you watching and listening, check out parentingaces.com or wherever you're consuming this podcast. Check out the show notes for links to Dean's website and a variety of videos that he's going to share and I'm going to share with you guys. And also, thanks, Dean, for letting me repost your stuff, because we got to get it in the hands of the parents and the junior coaches and the junior players themselves so they understand how to stay healthy out there and be able to perform at their best and avoid injury. So
yes.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me. I was truly, truly enjoyed it.
Great. And to my listeners, thank you so much for tuning in. We'll catch you next time on Parenting Aces.
I'm Lisa Stone, and you've been listening to the Parenting Aces podcast for tennis parents by a tennis parent. If you like what you heard, please subscribe to us and write a review on iTunes. For more information on navigating the junior and college tennis journey, please visit us online at parentingaces.com. Thanks for tuning in and sharing us with your tennis community.